Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and this is side two of For the Record program number 492, Musings on the End of One Year and the Beginning of Another. This is being recorded on December 26th of the year 2004. Before we get into the subject material on side two, remember various websites, two maintained by sister station WFMU that archive the For the Record programs on Real Audio. More recent programs are streaming at www.wfmu.org/Dave Emery, DaveEmory. Older shows available for download only at a longer URL linked to both that address and to the For the Record section of the Spitfire website at www.spitfirelist.com. The Spitfire website is a treasure trove of information. There are many things available. There are descriptions of the various CDs, lectures, and programs that I've done over the years. There are descriptions of same. The For the Record programs are turned into long article-length annotated descriptions so that people can read the material. Often those descriptions include material I didn't have time to include in the original broadcast. Also be aware that the landmark text, Martin Bormann, Nazi in Exile, essential for understanding the viewpoint presented on For the Record, is available for download for free. That book, authored by the late heroic Paul Manning, is, an incredibly important book. Also, there are links to, among other things, a website maintained by listeners in the Midwest that has all of the declassified U.S. government documents, declassified so far, documenting the Bush family's involvement with Nazi industry before, during, and after World War II. So please take advantage of the Spitfire website, www.spitfirelist.com. Now, we're talking about the Underground Reich, we're talking about the Bormann Group, we're talking about this vast concentration of capital, and in particular, we've been talking about a mysterious, reclusive, and extremely wealthy Idaho-based man named William Armstead Robinson. He was the founder of DHL. He is also the largest single financial backer of Arnold Schwarzenegger. And he also is, according to contentions made in court by both UPS and FedEx, serving as a cat's paw for the intrusion of German capital, specifically Deutsche Post, the German postal monopoly, into the American air carrier and cargo business. We've noted that among the people involved in these complicated machinations are Richard Blum, the husband of California Senator Dianne Feinstein. One of the things that the Manning text points out is that the Bormann Group often uses Jewish front people, specifically in order to mask the Nazi origins of the money and the Nazi character underlying these corporations. I've also noted that Deutsche Post and DHL is being represented by the powerful Washington law firm Wilmer, Cutler, and Pickering, and that one of its partners, Michael R. Klein, owns 20% of the new A-Star air carrier. That's part of the complicated corporate configuration that is the focal point of the Deutsche Post versus FedEx and UPS situation. Wilmer, Cutler, and Pickering, as noted in Side 1, was the law firm that not only incorporated Matthias Wismann, the former treasurer of the German CDU party, when the CDU was the focal point of a major funding scandal, which overlapped the Bormann Group. There are a number of For the Record programs about the CDU funding scandal. I've also noted that Wilmer, Cutler, and Pickering successfully represented Deutsche Telekom, a telecommunications firm controlled by the German government, when it attempted successfully to prevail on the Bush administration to allow it to buy into American telecommunications corporations that had previously been forbidden by American law. We're going to continue ever so briefly with discussion of the power behind Arnold Schwarzenegger. Again, Governor Schwarzenazi, as I call him, the Gruppenführer, was not born in the United States. His father was a Nazi. He has expressed open Nazi sentiments and has never, in any size, shape, form, or manner, recanted his support for Nazi war criminal Kurt Waldheim. Schwarzenegger lent his celebrity prestige to Kurt Waldheim's campaign when he was running to be head of the Austrian government. I would note that after the hard-hitting and very unfavorable biography, Arnold, by Wendy Lee, came out, Schwarzenegger basically masked his racism, anti-Semitism, and Nazi philosophical underpinnings by contributing millions of dollars to the Holocaust Remembrance Movement. That's actually pretty much vintage Schwarzenegger. We will at some point, when I do a whole program updating Governor Schwarzenazi, examine Schwarzenegger's methodology. Basically, he's not stupid at all. He's very Machiavellian. He will lead you in one direction and then stick it to you from the other. It's basically what he's doing in California, where he makes himself out to be someone who's opposed to the special interests. When I update Schwarzenegger's situation, one of the things we're going to point out is that Arnold Schwarzenegger has taken more special interest money than any politician in California history while professing the opposite, very much like George Bush. Basically, he says one thing and he does another. Machiavelli would be proud. More about the movement to make Arnold Schwarzenegger president of the United States. To do that, first, we have to amend the Constitution. Again, research credit on this to a member of the listening audience. This is from the Sacramento Bee of November 22, 2004. It's by Margaret Tollev. And this concerns Lisa Morgan Taylor Jones. She is the person who is behind the Amend for Arnold campaign. Skipping down. Speaking of venture capitalism, if anyone understands the game, Lisa Morgan Taylor Jones does. The 47-year-old Bay Area woman is a retired money manager and financial journalist, and the daughter of David Morgan Taylor, a patriarch of the venture capital industry who helped fuel the growth of the Silicon Valley. She's also an unabashed fan of Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger and the woman behind the Amend for Arnold, unquote, campaign. Skipping down, more about Lisa Morgan Taylor Jones. But Morgan Taylor Jones is not just some wealthy eccentric appearing out of nowhere. She grew up in a politically connected household. Her parents, she said, quote, used to party on the Bush parents' back porch, unquote. How about that? I would also note that Morgan Taylor Jones and the Draper family are partners in a number of business ventures. The Drapers are American power brokers of long standing, very close connections to the Bushes, also very close connections to many of the companies are to firms such as Dillon Reed that were deeply involved with investing in Nazi industry. William Draper Jr. was then in charge for a time of the economic, quote, reconstruction, unquote, of Germany, and he saw to it that the same business elements that had presided over Germany under Hitler's reign were put right back into power. And those elements, as we've seen so many times, had profound connections with their American counterparts, including and especially the Bush family. So, as you contemplate the rise of the Gruppenführer, and again, we'll be doing a program in the not-too-distant future updating what's been going on in California, because Schwarzenegger has basically been doing exactly what he has always done. He leads people in one direction and then comes back from the opposite. He is a Machiavellian individual and a pathological liar in terms of his political orientation. And his, you know, his munificence vis-a-vis the Holocaust Remembrance Movement, simply a cosmetic PR move. His marriage to Maria Shriver and his claims to be a Kennedy, it's all BS. In fact, he's exactly the sort of Machiavellian, say one thing and do another politician that George Bush is, and only he's a generation or two closer to the Herrenvolk. We're going to stick with the theme of the Bormann Group and specifically how this German economic mafia, basically. It's what you could think of the Bormann Group as being, a super mafia. You've heard of the Sicilian mafia, the Russian mafia, the Chinese mafia. You ever heard of the German mafia? It's the Bormann Group. That's what it is, except it's a hell of a lot more powerful than the others and has a political slash racial slash ethnic agenda. Basically, the Underground Reich is a multinational corporate state with state power invested in corporations instead of in territorial nations, and it has a nationalistic and ethnic agenda. We're going to revisit some of our programs with Daniel Hopsicker, and we're going to take a look at some of the people with whom Mohammed Atta was associated in Florida. We're going to begin by visiting a short section of Radio Free, For the Record program number 484, and we're going to take a look at one of the people who was associated with Wally Hilliard, with Rudy Deckers, and with Mohammed Atta in some of the flight training schools through which some of the September 11th hijackers infiltrated. And specifically, I want people to note that one of their associates was a guy named Richard Boelke, or Rick Boelke, that he in turn had worked for a wealthy German industrialist named Volker, who was buying up a lot of property in the Pacific Northwest. That's also where William Armstead Robinson is sequestered, and he basically appears to be, at least according to FedEx and UPS, something of a cat's paw for big German capital. As noted in the first side of the program briefly, the white supremacist and neo-Nazi elements in this country have what they call the Northwest Imperative. Their plan is to take a number of the states in the Northwest, Idaho, Washington, Oregon, Montana in some manifestations, Northern California and British Columbia, and turn them into a, quote, Aryan homeland, unquote. We're going to start with an excerpt from For the Record program number 484, talking about the fact that Mohammed Atta was not only associated with Germans in Florida. Remember that, as we've seen in many programs, Mohammed Atta was shepherded about both in Germany and the United States by the Karl Duisberg Gesellschaft. We're going to take a look at the people with whom Mohammed Atta was associated. We're going to be revisiting a section of our interview with Daniel Hopsicker from For the Record program number 484. And note that, according to the German BKA, a number of Atta's associates were sons and daughters of prominent German industrialists. Speaking about Richard Boelke, a partner with Rudy Deckers and Wally Hilliard in the abortive Florida Air, whose only personage seems to have been Catherine Harris, who endorsed this phantom airline. On page 233, you write, "Who had Rudy Deckers and company been working for? We didn't know anyone you could just walk up to and ask. Maybe we got a clue from Mike Pickett, the aviation executive who had watched Rick Boelke with the same amazement with which aviation professionals in Florida watched Deckers. Quote, when Boelke came in, he was just a restaurateur at the Gig Harbor Airport, he said. Again quoting, then he became the general manager for a German named Volker, a German industrialist buying up all the land in that area. More Germans. Jessica Daly, an attractive airline professional in her late 20s, worked for Rick Boelke at Harbor Air, and later transferred and worked for Rudy Deckers at Florida Air. While Harbor Air was going under, Boelke told Jessica to fly down to Florida and see Rudy. Quote, when I walked into his, Rudy's office, he was yelling and screaming at people, she recalled. Again quoting, he said, people call me a bastard Nazi because I'm loud and I'm German and I'm very demanding, unquote. Deckers told her he was German and not Dutch, Jessica said. Whether he was originally German or Dutch, what this brings to mind is one of the other very striking aspects of your investigation, Daniel, is that even though you're in Florida, you're investigating Arabs, people who were able to work with impunity at protected flight schools, which appear to be dummy fronts for various kinds of activity, including intelligence-related and drug smuggling activity. And yet, even though you're in Florida, one of the groups of people you keep coming across are Germans, and Mohammed Atta appears to, in many ways, have traveled within a German national milieu down there in Florida. Who is Timothy Hupfeld, one of his associates? Fill us in a little bit about Timothy Hupfeld.
Well, seven of Atta's closest associates were German, and we got their names and learned why each had been in Florida ostensibly, but I wasn't able to get too far into who they were. In fact, I got contacted by the German FBI, the BKA, whatever that agency is, and gave them their names, and so they know more about them than I do. They were we're looking at the sons, and in one case, the daughter of German industrialists, basically.
And these are
seven individuals. I've got the names of seven individuals that Atta hung out with and went to meetings with while he was in Florida.
And these were sons and daughters of prominent German industrialists.
So in several cases, that's what I was told.
So note, again, that Atta was not only associated with Germans in Florida, but specifically, according to Daniel Hopsicker, quoting from BKA sources, sons and daughters, at least in part, of German industrialists. K Can you say Bormann? We're also going to now visit a short section, visiting again via CD with Daniel Hopsicker. We're going to be revisiting a short section of For the Record 482, and specifically we're going to take a look at legal threats being made against Daniel Hopsicker's German publisher about the identity of some of Atta's German associates. There may be an attempt to use litigation to suppress the identity of the people with whom Mohammed Atta was associated. This is from radio from For the Record program 482.
Right now in Germany, my book I published in German, and one of Mohammed Atta's, seven of Mohammed Atta's closest associates in the last year of his life were German.
Right.
You know, they weren't Arab, they were German. I got their names. I put them in my book, and one of them right now is threatening to sue my German publisher for naming him in the book. And I'm telling this guy, I'm telling my German publisher that I've got, I mean, I'm sending him the proof. And yet, you know, there is at least the threat that these people are now going to be able to go back and erase history.
That, again, from For the Record program number 482. So note that at least some of Atta's German associates are working to suppress the disclosure of their identity. I would also note that, and this is an ominous look ahead to the future, Rudy Dekkers, the Dutchman, or in some cases, perhaps in some accounts, German, who was, along with Wally Hilliard, ran Huffman Aviation, at which or through which Atta and some of the other hijackers infiltrated the U.S. for the September 11th atrocities. Note that as we see now in yet another section from For the Record program 484, that Mohammed Atta and his German associates are illegally entering and leaving the United States without going through customs through this Bahamas-based German network that Daniel Hopsicker alludes to, and they're taking jet training in Tennessee. I would hope that people in the intelligence community, the military, law enforcement, would take note of this. I sure hope they listen to these broadcasts, and I hope that they would use the material as research sources, rather than looking at me as some sort of commie, subversive, whatever. But I sure hope that people in the intelligence community and law enforcement are paying attention to this, because Rudy Dekkers and his German network are still in business taking jet training in Florida, and I fear that another incident, another horror show, probably worse than what we've seen, is in the offing. Here, this is from For the Record 484.
There they are, and they are still operating. And Rudy Dekkers, I'm told, is even now learning to fly jets in Tennessee.
So basically, this operation is still taking place. Rudy Dekkers is learning to fly jets in Tennessee.
Yes.
And you mentioned, I think last week, that there are some Germans working with him. And yes. And one fellow operating under the alias of Black, who's actually an Egyptian.
Did I mention that?
Yeah.
I'll be darned. Indiscreet me. How indiscreet could I be? Thank God you're in California. And not only that, but Rudy Dekkers, I have been told by a credible witness, is being secreted illegally into the U.S. through the Bahamas, through this German network, currently entering and leaving the U.S. illegally without going through customs.
That, again, from For the Record program number 484. So please note that Rudy Dekkers and his German associates are still in business, infiltrating the U.S. through the Bahamas and taking jet training in Tennessee, according to Daniel Hopsicker. What we're going to do next is to revisit a section of For the Record program 475. One of the things that we talked, or excuse me, For the Record program number 474, one of the things that we looked at in For the Record 474 were indications that Al-Qaeda was looking for non-Arabs to use as operational elements in upcoming incidents. In our broadcasts dealing with September 11th, and specifically these are encompassed in For the Record 456, Compendium on Nazi and Fascist Connections to September 11th, we've taken a look at the fact that both the first World Trade Center attack and apparently Oklahoma City and September 11th involved collusion between Middle Eastern slash Muslim elements and American white supremacist slash Nazi elements, probably working with Germans of like-minded orientation. One of the things, and I think this, the item I'm about to reprise, should be taken in conjunction with what Daniel Hopsicker has disclosed about Rudy Deckers and his German associates continuing to infiltrate the U.S. illegally without going through customs and taking jet training in Tennessee. I see that as a very ominous harbinger of things to come, and I suspect that the next horror show will involve, again, collaboration between Islamist elements and American/white supremacist or neo-Nazi elements to be used at the operational level in order to avoid triggering racial profiling. As you listen to the article I'm about to reread, ask yourselves, why? Why would the FBI deep six the career of Mike German, an FBI special agent who had specialized in infiltrating white supremacist groups? This is from the New York Times of August 2, 2004. Another FBI employee blows whistle on agency. It's by Eric Lichtblau. It reads, as a veteran agent chasing homegrown terrorist suspects for the Federal Bureau of Investigation, Mike German always had a knack for worming his way into places few other agents could go. In the early 1990s, he infiltrated a group of white supremacist skinheads plotting to blow up a black church in Los Angeles. A few years later, he joined a militia in Washington State that talked of attacking government buildings. Known to his fellow militia members as Rock, he tricked them into handcuffing themselves in a supposed training exercise so the authorities could arrest them. So in early 2002, when Mr. German got word that a group of Americans might be plotting support for an overseas Islamic terrorist group, he proposed to his bosses what he thought was an obvious plan: go undercover and infiltrate the group. But Mr. German says FBI officials sat on his request, botched the investigation, falsified documents to discredit their own sources, then froze him out and made him a pariah. He left the Bureau in mid-June after 16 years and is now going public for the first time, the latest in a string of FBI whistleblowers who claimed they were retaliated against after voicing concerns about how management problems had impeded terrorism investigations since the September 11th attacks. What's so frustrating for me, Mr. German said in an interview, a copy of the September 11th Commission report at his side, is what I hear the FBI saying every day on TV when I get home, about how it's remaking itself to fight terrorism, is not the reality of what I saw every day in the field. Mr. German refused to discuss details of the 2002 terrorism investigation, saying the information was classified. But officials with knowledge of the case said the investigation took place in the Tampa, Florida area, where a domestic militia-type group and a major but unidentified Islamic terrorist organization were considering joining forces. Interrupting briefly, of course, it is that area of Florida that is the stomping ground of Rudy Deckers and company, or was. Mohammed Atta was there. I would also note that that area is where Sami Al-Arian and his associates had held forth, and Sami Al-Arian was part of the SAR network, the nexus of funding for September 11th and for Al-Qaeda and also for Hamas. Continuing here. Law enforcement officials have become increasingly concerned that militant domestic groups could seek to collaborate with foreign-based terrorist groups like Al-Qaeda because of a shared hatred of the American government. This has become a particular concern in prisons. The Tampa case is not known to have produced any arrests, but Mr. German, in an April 29th letter to several members of Congress, warned that, quote, the investigations involved in my complaint concern very active terrorist groups that currently pose significant threats to national security. Mr. German, in his letter to lawmakers, cited a continuing failure in the FBI's counterterrorism program, unquote, which he said was, again, quote, not the result of a lack of intelligence, but a lack of action, unquote. Officials said Mr. German also complained internally about a second case in Portland, the Portland, Oregon area in 2002, in which he said he was blocked from going undercover to pursue a domestic terrorism lead. That case was also thought to center on a militia group suspected of plotting violence. In the Tampa case, officials said Mr. German complained that the FBI officials had mishandled evidence concerning a suspected domestic terrorist group and failed to act for months on his request in early 2002 to conduct an undercover operation. Skipping down. He said FBI officials whom he would not name backdated documents in the case, falsified evidence, and falsely discredited witnesses in an apparent effort to justify their approach to the investigation. And again, in a number of programs, including For the Record 310 and 348, I viewed, voiced my opinion that, in fact, Robert Mueller is a fixer in the FBI, meant to deliver the Bureau to the conspirators. He has a long history of less than vigorous investigations, and I think the FBI itself is being destabilized. One of the points of investigation, I think, for September 11th and whatever sort of horror show is coming up next, and that concerns SECO, the Saudi investment company. That is the Geneva-based holding company for the very powerful and wealthy bin Laden family's European investments. We're going to reprise a section now from Daniel Hopsicker's book, Welcome to Terrorland. Swiss police questioned Yaslam bin Laden because one of his companies, Avcon Air Charter, had offered flight training to clients at the Venice flight school attended by some of the hijackers. Parenthetically, that was Rudy Decker's Huffman Aviation. As a result of what Le Monde called a still unexplained coincidence, the pilots of Yaslam bin Laden's company trained at Huffman Aviation in Florida, the paper stated, quote, "I didn't choose that flight school," Yaslam protested. "I didn't have contact with my half-brother since over 20 years ago." Swiss magazine L'Hebdo reported that Swiss federal inspectors were seeking information on the activities of several bin Laden family companies, including Geneva-based Saudi investment company, a financial clearinghouse for the family's international investments, and Avcon Business Jets SA, which owned a fleet of private jets, which it leased to clients. So note that SECO has a link to little old Huffman Aviation and Rudy Decker's. Reprising a section now from For the Record program number 356, this from an article by the remarkable Lucy Commissar, Banking with Bin Laden, from In These Times of March 15th of 2002. Note the link of Baudin Dunant, an associate of, friend of, and attorney for François Genoux, one of the most important Odessa operatives, a man who assisted with the post-war diaspora of Nazi war criminals around the world, and who also was a primary dispenser of funds for that Nazi diaspora. We've talked about François Genoux at great length. His associate, friend, and attorney, Baudin Dunant, was the co-chairman of the board of directors of SECO. More about SECO and the Clearstream network, about which we've spoken. It's owned by Deutsche Börse. It's one of the primary international financial clearinghouses. From Banking with Bin Laden by Lucy Commissar from FTR 356, but bin Laden may have other access to the unpublished system. In what he calls a spectacular discovery, unquote, Ernest Backes reports that in the weeks before CEO Andre Lucy was forced to leave Clearstream last May, a series of 16 unpublished accounts were opened under the name of the Saudi Investment Company, or SECO, the Geneva holding company of the Saudi bin Laden group, which is run by Osama's brother, Yaslam bin Laden. Some family members spell the name differently. Yaslam bin Laden insists that he has nothing to do with his brother, but evidence suggests SECO is tied into Osama's financial network. Furthermore, one of SECO's administrators, Geneva attorney Baudin Dunant, is a partner in a law firm, Magnin Dunant and Partners, that set up the Swiss Financial Services SBA, which is controlled by the family of the bin Mahfouz family. So again, note that Baudin Dunant, a member of the board of directors of SECO, friend, attorney for, and a protege of François Genoux, one of the most important Odessa operatives, SECO opened 16 unpublished accounts through Clearstream in early 2001, despite the fact that private companies aren't supposed to do that, and that basically is one of the points that I think we need to investigate. SECO, its relationship with Baudin Dunant, also a guy named Mardam Khalil Bey, and the fact that SECO was sending pilots to tiny Huffman Aviation in Florida. The Huffman, Atta, German, SECO, Dunant, Genoux connection is one that I think needs to be investigated in order to follow the money, as Deep Throat told Woodward and Bernstein in Watergate. This, however, concludes For the Record program number 492. Musings on the end of one year and the beginning of another. This has been recorded on December 26th of the year 2004. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.